Join Adel Kozilski and Feige Stern as they explore ways to reverse chronic illness and achieve vibrant health. Your health is your only wealth, and together we can be better. Hashtag healthy you, wealthy you.
It's a beautiful good morning. Welcome to 101 High FM, 101.9 megahertz of Healthy Life. This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show. I'm joined in studio with Feige.
Good morning, Adel. Even though you're far away, at least we can still do radio over Zoom.
Yes, this is actually quite incredible because, you know, I was thinking in the olden days, I'm going to give away my age. But I remember, and I was telling one of the Chai FM producers yesterday that I've been around with Chai FM for more than 20 years. I remember going to the dungeon in the SABC in Auckland Park. I used to schlep, have to go down into to this like dark place. And this is where we started with radio. And today, yes, we can do radio wherever we are, wherever we find ourselves. So technology has definitely bettered our lives in that we have certainly made it more convenient. And we come to you every single week because we want to talk about being healthy, staying healthy, reversing a lot of that which we cause ourselves. And I think that that's very, very important. Today, we have a special guest. Her name is Dr. Sky Scott. She's a GP that has over a decade of experience in corporate wellness. But she is also very passionate about women's health, patient empowerment, and understanding people as interconnected systems. She is currently completing a postgraduate certificate in menopause medicine. I didn't know that you could have a postgraduate in menopause medicine. I'm a doctor in menopause medicine because I've gone through menopause. Through the University of South Wales. And she's had tremendous response around her menopause talk. She's also co-founder of a practice called Health with Heart. It's an all-female business which brings mind, body medicine, and wellness initiatives to corporation. She's also the voice behind the Health with Heart Dr. Sky podcast. She's a mom to three girls. She loves to paint brush to canvas, and that's when she isn't doctoring. And she also likes to dance up and down the Westcliff steps. Heck, you must be very, very active and very, very healthy to do that. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. We've got to walk the talk, Adel.
I walk the beach. I don't think I could go walk up and down the West Cliff. Even though I was thinking, you know, here at the coast, because it's you know, very hilly, I should just walk up and down, you know, from the beach to the beach. And that's enough cardio to get your ticker going. But thank you for walking the talk. It's very, very important. So before we start, and I'd like to center a lot around menopause because it's something that, you know, every single woman faces. There's a lot of discussion around it. This last week has shown the FDA uplifting the ban on estrogen, which was something that I stayed away because it was banned, right? So we can have a discussion around that and everything else. Tell us a little bit more about yourself. How did you get into the integrative space?
I got into the integrative space because my practice is in corporate Sandton, and the demographic of the people that we engage with, they're generally quite driven, well-optimized humans. And so where we weren't necessarily treating disease, we wanted to learn how to prevent disease. And functional medicine or integrative medicine is really about root causes of disease and preempting and understanding your risk profile and prophylactically designing your life in a way that you're not going to get sick. And, you know, we used to die from infections and spears to our hearts, but now we die from the way that we eat and the way that we don't move. And chronic diseases of lifestyle are the drivers of causes of death and the drivers of the increased incidence of cancers. And like you said, so much of the disease that we manifest these days is of our own choosing. And so functional medicine is really around co-creating well-being, taking responsibility for this home that you're in and that you have a responsibility to care for. And so I think it's such a powerful way of thinking about wellness. And it moves away from that very didactic doctor-patient relationship where your doctor knows everything and just tells you what to do, to a more collaborative space where education and empowerment and understanding how your actions influence your genetics and influence your body shape and influence your cardiovascular risk are very central to the conversation. So it was, yeah, really a drive to optimize people, to prevent them getting sick, to improve performance, to help people to feel good, which I also think is something that we sometimes forget about in our frenzy that we're all running around in.
Did you have any personal experience, or was it just on you looking at your client base and seeing that a lot of the illness or dis-ease that they came with just actually came because of all those contributing factors?
So I'm very grateful to say that I have generally been blessed with quite a healthy body. And, you know, I had a bursitis of my left elbow recently, and I was horrified, A, that I could get bursitis, and B, at the impact that it had on just my day-to-day level of functioning. And so whilst I haven't had my own personal experience with disease, I'm very grateful for. It's always so sobering to just experience the impact that one small thing not working can have on how you are in the world, and how you feel, and how your mood is, and how your sleep is, and how all those things feed into one another.
We discuss so often on the show about people really like walking around feeling like terrible majority of the time, actually just thinking that it's normal. And how, you know, the brain fog and the fatigue and the exhaustion and the migraines and the aches and the pains in the bones, you know, and the joints. And what you're trying to say is also all the functional medicine approach is to really look at everything that a person does in their lives to optimize that and to say to them, actually, you don't have to feel that way.
Absolutely. And I think what you're really talking about also is a kind of disembodiment, because when we are embodied, and when we are using our bodies in the way that they were designed to be used, then we don't have aches and pains and migraines. And, you know, it's complex, and we don't live in a utopian natural environment. Life is stressful and full of toxins and stresses and poor dietary habits that are hard to avoid, and alcohol and drugs and pharmaceutical drugs. And it sometimes feels like we're swimming upstream. And I think that people are so cognitively engaged these days. And I think that with this information age, there's such a focus on cognitive enhancement and investment that we neglect our bodies from the neck down. And then you wake up a few years later and nothing's working and you feel terrible and you're not sure why. But when you shift into a more mindful experience of your actual body and of how it senses, and even the intuitive messages that it receives that we often negate, that feeling in your belly, the hair standing up on your arm, suppressing pain that is a message to say something is wrong, or the way that you're sitting all day is not supportive, or the way that you're sleeping is not supportive. So I think a first step is for us to just reconnect with what's happening in the body and resensitize ourselves to those messages, because they are gentle in the beginning. And when you heed them, then you can shapeshift and habit shift slowly and incrementally rather than waiting for a crash.
Yeah, I think that, and I've had so many discussions with many of the doctors that I engage in. And I think early in the last 20, 30 years, like I've started looking at all that you've said. And the bottom line is that it's really, really difficult, in today's age to live a utopian. I mean, there are those that will go and take a homestead and put it in the middle of the Natal Hills and, you know, wake up with the sun and go to sleep with the sun and not really worry about too much more.
And that dream farm that we're going to go live on one day.
Yeah, but the bottom line is it's stressful. Even if you don't even have stress, if you just want to get into your car and, you know, cross a couple of roads to get to the shopping center or anything, you engage with the world, and the world, you know, works at a very, very, very fast pace. And so you get sucked into that vortex, and it is probably more vital today than ever before to have that mindfulness, to retract, to move back and say, I've got to find ways within myself to calm down my nervous system, to calm down my mind, calm down, you know, who I am, because you have to counter what's happening outside, unless, again, you want to go live on that homestead. Okay, we're talking to Dr. Skye Scott. We are going to now start to have a whole conversation around menopause. Would you like to join the conversation? It's the SMS line is 34519. And the telegram number is 061-895-1019.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Faggy Stern.
We're speaking to Dr. Skye Scott, and we are going to have a discussion now around menopause. And while we were waiting to come online, I was thinking to myself, you know, while menopause in and of itself is a stage in a woman's life, would you say that the way in which the body, the woman, navigates menopause actually is the end part of the way a woman navigates her hormonal and her reproductive life, like from 18, meaning, you know, if you start with youngsters and you're starting with hormones at that age, and there is, you know, whatever disruptions there are in the hormonal system, PCOS, endometriosis, et cetera, by the time you land up in menopause, you're kind of like down the road. Or can we say that they're separate issues?
You know, I'm not sure what you mean by down the road, but women spend up to a third of their lives now in a menopausal state, which is unlike most other reproductive animals. Other reproductive animals reproduce until they die. And it's only really us and whales, certain breeds of whales.
I think we would die if we have a baby at 18. That's why. Okay.
There's different epidemiological reflections on why we spend a whole third of our lives in this state. And, you know, there's this beautiful idea in epidemiology of women as the wisdom keepers. And there's lots of research that supports the tribes that have matriarchal leadership, which are led by women in this phase of life, have less death and less war and less conflict and better health outcomes. And so I think it's a moment for us to shift from, I think that there's lots of shifts that happen at this time, and that just shifting from a reproductive role and a maternal role into a role where you can also begin to nourish yourself and fill your own cup, I think that's one of the things. And I think that one of the really eloquent mirror images of perimenopause, that tumultuous time leading into that last period, is a kind of mirror image of adolescence, where you're rebranding and you're having this kind of identity moment, like, who am I and what is my life about? And you're transitioning into this new chapter. And so I think it's an opportunity to take a moment for yourself and decide how you want to navigate the next phase, but also just a very powerful moment where you're shifting from mothering into a more collective mothering and a more collective leadership role for your community and the people around you.
So I love everything that you said. My question is, would have my behaviors in my reproductive years and the way that I navigated through that have an effect on how I will go through perimenopause and menopause?
Is it something like, let's say, a teenager's taking contraceptives and that has an effect on someone in their future?
So kind of like, I'm thinking, like, say somebody has chosen not to have children, you know, in their 20s, they're only going to start perhaps when they're in the 30s, even, you know, going into 35, where we know then already there's, you know, they're starting to compromise the health of the egg, et cetera, whatever. They've been on contraceptives all that time. They now have to have intervention, maybe through IVF, et cetera. Will that have a knock-on effect with perimenopause?
On menopause.
That's my question.
Got it. I understand. Thanks for clarifying. So generally, there's a very strong genetic component to when you stop menstruating. And on average, Caucasian women stop at the age of 51. And obviously, there are always outliers in any definition in medicine. So you can get early menopause, and then you can get what we call premature menopause, which happens even earlier. And so what happens in those reproductive years doesn't necessarily change when your last cycle is going to be. I think that how you experience hormone fluctuations will impact your experience. So if you're somebody who's really struggled with PMS or premenstrual dysphoric syndrome in your reproductive years, those precipitous drops in hormone levels in perimenopause and menopause might be super symptomatic for you. If you've been somebody that's just sailed through your reproductive years, sailed through your pregnancies, sailed through postpartum, then it's more likely that those fluctuations are not going to affect you. And I think that how you experience those changes is also influenced by your general or metabolic health and your psychic health and your, you know, your body habitus. So if you're really inflamed and you've got lots of comorbidities, I think it's more likely to be more symptomatic. But it's hard to predict how it's going to be or even when it's going to be. And I think that, you know, we're always building towards our future body, even though your body is replenishing and replacing itself all the time. And I always tell patients, you know, you're designed to heal and the moment of power is now. I think that our earlier blueprints definitely are laying a path for what's coming in the future.
Surely then it would make sense to have your hormones tested, you know, constantly, or your insulin tested constantly, or your inflammation markers constantly, like, so that you know what to do in order for menopause to not just smack you in the face.
So, you know, the truth is that there isn't actually any evidence for testing hormone levels. And the reason for that is that if you test your hormone levels every day between the ages of 30 and 60, well, not 30 and 60, let's say 30 and 51, you're going to get different readings all the time. And there's different schools of thought about what we call hormone balance or the relationship between your estrogen and your progesterone levels. And we know that estrogen and progesterone are kind of, I like to think of them as peas and carrots. They go together and you need the one to keep the other in check. And there's this kind of harmony that's happening all the time. And some of us are more sensitive to that state being disharmonious or changing, which is very characteristic of those years leading up to your period stopping, because some months you won't ovulate and you won't make a nice surge of progesterone, and then your brain will say, hang on, she didn't ovulate last month, let's overstimulate the ovaries this month, and then you hatch more than one egg and now you have an estrogen surge, and then you're making your progesterone peak. So it's tumultuous. And if you visualized it on a graph, it's more like a roller coaster than the sort of steady undulating waves of your reproductive years. I've lost my train of thought. So you asked about testing. So it's not really helpful to test in this phase of life. And I think that with social media and all the hype around health and wellness online, it's easy to get sucked into this anxiety around testing and around knowing all of these things. But no, I think that if we just go back to basics and how we were designed to exist and cycle and nourish ourselves and rest and sleep, and if you just come back to those really basic things, you're unlikely to struggle with hormone imbalances and lots of symptoms. And so the test that we usually use around this time, and there isn't really a test to diagnose perimenopause, it's a clinical diagnosis. So you're going to come to your doctor with symptoms. And I think what's maybe disappointing about where we are at this moment with symptomatic perimenopause is often patients will go to a few gynies and their gynies will say, your bloods are perfect, you're making lots of hormones, your FSH, that molecule that your brain uses to talk to your ovaries, is normal. You're fine, but they're having hot flushes and they're not sleeping, or they're very anxious, or they've got brain fog. And I think that with the celebrity doctors on social media driving this change, and with courses, like you say, there never used to be a menopause medicine course. I think it's shifting. And I think that the next generation of women is really going to reap the rewards of all of that knowledge and all of that research. Unfortunately, research on women and research on the impact of women's hormones on our bodies is quite new in medicine. In the 80s, they did a study on the impact of estrogen on the cardiovascular system. And guess who they did the study on?
Men.
They did it on men. They did it on men. And that was the other day. This is a new dawn. It's a new dawn.
I'm just thinking to myself, there must be so many more women doing medicine these days, and maybe that's why now there's a course on menopause, and actually people are taking control.
Absolutely. There's incredible women that are driving women's health and driving investment in women's health, which was very largely neglected historically.
Okay, so let's talk about this hormone replacement therapy discussion. I wouldn't say conspiracy, because it seems that we swing the pendulum backwards and forwards. And I know for myself, and then I know for other people that have chatted to me, whatever, like, what should I do? Should I go natural? Should I take it? Shouldn't I take it? What's your opinion on all of that?
On all of that. So I think I'll state up front that I'm very pro HRT. The more that I read, the more that I understand that perimenopause and menopause, well, especially perimenopause, it's an inflammatory moment in the body. And the fluctuations have a really meaningful impact on mood, on comfort in our bodies, on fat metabolism, on joint pain, on gastrointestinal function, on so much. The moment, the time of life where women are most vulnerable to suicide is actually during perimenopause. And so it can be very symptomatic for women. And with body identical hormone replacement, and I'll get into what that means in a second, you can really ameliorate symptoms safely. Historically, and most of the data that we have is done on synthetic hormones. So you get synthetic HRT and you get body identical HRT. Synthetic HRT is the molecule looks a lot like what your body's molecule looks like, but maybe it's got an extra little arm on the side. And so because of that extra little arm or hand on the side, you get stimulation of receptors that are unintentional. And that can be changes in weight, changes in mood, acne, hair growth, changes in your cycle. But when we use body identical hormones, these are molecules that mimic exactly what your body makes. And when we give estrogen through the skin or vaginally, the risk on your cardiovascular system is neutral. So when women take estrogen orally, that estrogen is metabolized through our livers, and that process upregulates clotting factors. And so it increases your risk of having a deep vein thrombosis or a clot in your lower limb that can shoot up to your lungs or your brain by 15 times the normal population or a woman not on hormones. When we give estrogen through the skin, that risk is neutral. And the other important thing to say about how we administer these hormones is that your progesterone needs to be oral, because progesterone is quite a large molecule, and it's not always, in some people maybe, but not in everybody, is it well absorbed through the skin. So in order to protect our endometriums from not hypertrophying or getting too stimulated by the estrogen that we're taking, we need to take our progesterone orally. And one of the beautiful things about body identical progesterone is that it also stimulates the GABA receptors of our brain. So GABA is a neuroinhibitory transmitter. One of the symptoms that women often complain around this time of life is increased heightened anxiety. They've never been an anxious person, and now all of a sudden they're ruminating and they're worried and they're up all night. And you give them body identical progesterone, and not everybody, but most. Unfortunately, there's no everybody or one size fits all in medicine. A lot of women find it very soothing and regulating. And the jury on how long we should be replacing hormones is still out. We don't really have enough data. And absolutely, as with all things, there are some contraindications to taking hormones that I think we just don't have enough data, for example, on women who've had a previous breast cancer diagnosis or an estrogen-sensitive cancer. So it's not entirely straightforward, but replacing hormones responsibly and via a safe route can really have a significant impact on all of the symptoms of this transition.
Can I go back just one step? Would it not then just be beneficial to take GABA? I mean, besides for the progesterone that the person needs, obviously, yes, because the progesterone needs to be raised, but then is it not beneficial to take GABA?
So that's a good question. And for some people, taking GABA can be beneficial. But remember that you've got estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone receptors on every cell in your body. Like, historically, and through the patriarchal lens, if we rewind many, many years, they really only thought about these sex hormones in the context of reproduction, or in the context of the uterus, or in the context of hysteria, which is the word for uterus. Hist means uterus. And what we now understand is that when you stimulate the receptors, the hormone receptors of cells throughout your body, there's an impact on every organ system. There's an impact on your cardiovascular risk. There's an impact on your cognition, on your memory, on your focus, on your word finding. And there does seem to be a sort of window of opportunity where you don't want to be giving women out 10 years beyond their last period hormones. And there's different hypotheses about why that might be. Are those receptors not working anymore? Is the cell not healthy enough to metabolize those hormones? But again, this is an area of medicine where we don't have enough data. And I think it might change in the future. But the women in generations to come, I think, are definitely going to be rewarded with HRT much earlier than they were in generations previously.
So is HRT primarily for that, it's like a bridge between your reproductive space and that's when you, and menopause. That's when HRT, like you don't take HRT in menopause.
So Adele, a study came out actually in the last month on starting HRT earlier rather than later. So starting it earlier in your perimenopause actually reduced health outcomes or negative health outcomes by 60% more than starting it just in menopause. So absolutely, I think that there's a very strong case for using HRT in perimenopause if you're symptomatic. Beyond menopause, when you have significant drop-off of all of your hormones, it impacts your bone predominantly. And 1 in 2 postmenopausal women are osteopenic or osteoporotic, and 1 in 2 women will have an osteoporotic fracture between their menopause and dying, which is pretty radical. 20% of women that break their hips will die in the first year following that fracture. And unless you are being very mindful about weight-bearing exercise and building bone, hormone replacement therapy is a very vital arm of preserving bone. So I suppose we could dice this up into treating symptoms and preventing other complications of being in a hormone-deficient state. And I can hear your, you know, I share your questions around us intervening in something that is a natural way of being, like, why would this natural way of being be counterproductive for us? But I don't know what the answer to the question is, but the more I read, the more I think that HRT in late perimenopause and early menopause is going to reduce cardiovascular risk. It's going to reduce your risk of fractures. It's going to reduce your mental health burden. And again, not for everybody, but for most women. And I see it so articulately in my practice.
Okay, we're speaking to Dr. Skye Scott. If you've got a question, and I mean, I still have lots and lots of questions, you can SMS us on 34519. You can send a telegram to, what happened? Why have I forgotten now? You see, I'm having a menopausal.
You need estrogen.
Wait, I forgot my estrogen today. 8951019 is our telegram number.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Faggy Stern.
We're speaking with Dr. Skye Scott and we are talking menopause. So let me ask you this question, that you are pro-HRT. Is it something that you could say, well, once you use the HRT in the correct ways, using bioidentical hormones, et cetera, and it does reduce the risk, it does not abrogate you from paying attention to things like weight bearing and all of that. Like it's not, what I'm saying is that the culture today in medicine is that if there's something wrong, take a tablet. So I'm going to go I'm just like HRT and I'm fine. I then don't have to worry what I'm eating. I don't have to worry about my protein intake. I don't have to worry about my weight bearing exercise because, you know, that will sort it out.
So Adel, I hear you. I think we're absolutely living in a moment where everybody just wants a pill to fix everything. And it comes back to this collaborative, co-creative energy around looking after our bodies. You know, you're building your body every moment with every action that you choose, what you put in your mouth, what thoughts you choose to have, how stressed you decide to be, how much you rest, how many push-ups you do or don't do, how much you move or sit. All of these things have a very deep and meaningful impact on the way you're going to metabolize those hormones, on the other neurochemistry of happiness that, you know, is so essential outside of those hormones. So it does not absolutely abdicate you of any of those responsibilities. I think going back to basics is the primary approach to absolutely every disease prevention or disease management program that I ever think about. So how we eat, how we sleep, how we relate to the people around us, how we exercise and use our bodies and build muscle and strength absolutely comes first before any script of any kind. And I think that if you're living on that homestead closer to the earth with less stresses and you're growing your own food and you're toiling the land and using your body all day, you're definitely going to be less symptomatic. I think that's a given.
Okay, we've got two comments from listeners. The first is, I want to know, if you take HRT, will you carry on having a period every month forever?
That's a great question. So you get cyclical HRT and you get continuous HRT. And generally, when women are in their perimenopausal phase and they're still menstruating a little bit, but they're still symptomatic of those peaks and troughs of hormone levels, then we cycle the hormones and you still have a period. But beyond your menopause, you do not have to have a period anymore. And we just give you continuous replacements to protect your bone, to reduce that cardiovascular risk, and to improve your memory, cognition, word finding, and general well-being.
Okay, and the next thing I think is more a comment, but you can comment on the comment. It says, we can die from not getting enough vitamin D because our mitochondria needs that vitamin D to perform thousands of functions. And when the mitochondria changes, that's when one, for example, can get cancer. So vitamin D is number one, and it's a vitamin. It's a hormone. Like, why are people not talking about that?
Well, Adel, as you can see, I've written it in the chat. Can we discuss the role of vitamin D in metabolic health on menopause? So well done.
So vitamin D, we are talking about vitamin D. We check every woman's vitamin D in our practice. We check every, especially menstruating woman's iron stores. There's so many micronutrients that are imperative for healthy ovulation in your reproductive years and then for healthy metabolism of hormone replacement therapy or just preserving your bone with adequate levels of vitamin D. And interestingly, the laboratories have increased the reference ranges for what's normal in this year. So in the functional medicine community, they've always spoken about aspiring towards a level of vitamin D of about 50 or 60. And the reference ranges from Ampath and Lancet used to be about 20 as sufficient. And now it says normal is 20 to 60 on all of those reports that give us reference ranges. So I think that the conversation around this is absolutely changing. And the impact of adequate vitamin D levels are very far reaching on all metabolic processes.
I think it's actually a little tricky because sometimes you can go to one doctor and they'll say, no, your vitamin D is fine. And you come to someone like you, who's a functional medicine doctor, and you say, absolutely not. It's way too low.
So, I think that it's like asking rabbis questions. If you ask 10 rabbis a question, you might get 10 different answers.
Hey, you'll probably get 20 because they'll argue with themselves.
Exactly. And it's the same with doctors. And so I always say to patients, you need to find somebody that you resonate with. Because how you're thinking about your well-being journey also has a powerful impact on your cellular health. And if you feel invested and you feel a sense of trust and you feel safe, creating safety in the body is a step towards healing. So I'm not pedantic about levels. I think that you need to find a practitioner that you resonate with, and you need to back that practitioner, and you need to have a relationship with that person where you can ask these questions and you can thrash it out. And the truth is that all these things are changing so dynamically all the time. It's hard to keep up with everything, especially as a general practitioner. And medicine, like everything in the world, is just getting more and more specialized. And once you go down the rabbit hole, I mean, I could be reading about menopause literally all day. I wouldn't have time to see patients. So you've got to find the right person and then decide, I'm backing this person that feels right for me, and we're going to go on this journey. And if you bring them a paper or a question or a chat that you've had with ChatGPT and you say, look, ChatGPT says that we should be aiming for this, I promise you they'll listen. We're all learning all the time.
I did that just the other day with my nutritionist. I sent her a whole host of things based on my bloods, saying that it's my insulin that's causing my vitamin D and iron deficiency. And she says, it's not so simple.
So it's tricky. I think our role in the future is going to be more in counseling and supporting people to understand and debunk all the things that social media and the internet is telling us.
You guys are going to have to start hiring someone to debunk the ChatGPT stuff. Otherwise, you're going to be spending your whole life telling your patients what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, you go, Adel.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that all this access to information is so wonderful, but I think it also can inspire quite a lot of health anxiety. That's something
Yes.
that we see so much of in general practice. And, you know, I think health anxiety itself can make you sick. I'm always worried about my very health anxious patients because they see me all the time and they're
Yes.
always worried that it's this or it's that. And you get so worried that you're going to miss something in those patients because they're always health seeking. And so I think there's a fine line between empowering yourself and making yourself neurotic. And you've got to just go back to basics and tick all those basic boxes and then put your faith in the rest.
Okay, we've got another comment from a listener. Thanks for the very informative topic. Does Femigel estradiol, if I think, increase weight?
So that is a great question. Women are always worried about weight gain with hormones, but what the literature actually says is that women who start HRT sooner have less weight gain in menopause. Unfortunately, weight gain and menopause hold hands, and there is a lot of data to support that most women will gain at least 2 to 10 kilograms through that transition. And that's why I think being really proactive early, as soon as you start to feel symptomatic, as soon as you notice, I can't lose a kilo in a week the way that I used to. Our metabolic rates shift and change as we get older. And there's something in obesity science called set point theory, where your body is always trying to keep the weight that it has been for the most recent period of time. So even if you dramatically drop some kilograms, your body is potentially going to make you more hungry and slow your metabolic rate down to regain that fat. And so there's a lot of nuance around this, but the short answer is Femigel does not cause weight gain.
There you've got it. We're going for a little bit of a break. This is 101.9 High FM.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Feige Stern.
I always say this, but you know, when you get engaged and you have a lot of fun, you can sit here and talk for hours. And now I look at the clock and we've got a couple of minutes. I want to make one comment and then give it over to you, just kind of like to wrap it up and then, you know, just direct people where, if they want to engage with you, they can find you. And that is a point that you were making just before the break, that, you know, I think one of the things that we've lost is for us to be intuitive about how our body actually feels. Like there is this disembodiment, meaning like my head and me and where I am, I'm running away, and this like body is like this, I don't know what, burden that I carry along, and when it complains, I just give it a tablet, right? And that probably part of the discussion around not only menopause, but well-being generally, is that if your body is diseased, if there's something wrong, listen here, and that will help you guide yourself and then be guided by the practitioner you choose to help you on your health journey. Where most people just, you know, come very quickly, can have a 5-minute consultation, I get headaches, okay, here's a tablet, thank you, have a nice day.
Adel, I think that's such a powerful place to leave the listeners. I think that reconnecting with how, you know, your body is how you experience the world. And absolutely how you think and the way that you perceive things has an impact on that. But our senses are so glorious, and our capacity for joy through movement and joy through intimacy and joy through connection and hugs and kisses and cuddles, you know, those things are so powerful. And touch is as important as HRT. So, you know, we didn't even get into libido and sexual function and vaginal dryness and vaginal lubrication and the impact that not treating a dry vagina in your 60s and beyond can have on your risk for UTIs and your risk for sepsis. So this is so multifaceted. We could really talk about this for hours. And heeding those messages and reconnecting or creating a daily practice where you actually just scan your body. It will calm you down. It will down-regulate your cortisol production. And when you down-regulate your stress hormone production, you up-regulate potentially, or you balance or synchronize better your sex hormone production. So all of these parts speak to one another and constellate beautifully. And you can't look at hormones in isolation, and you can't look at how you're feeling in your body in isolation. We are multifaceted creatures, and we're an extension of the natural universe. I think that even our environments impact our health. So there's so much that you can do to feel better.
All right. Well, you've given us like a topic for our next conversation. We will definitely bring you back on to discuss part two of the menopause journey. If people would like to be in contact with you, how can they find you?
Thank you, Adele. You can check out our website, which is healthwithheart.co.za. We do lots of work with businesses specifically on empowerment and health empowerment and even experiential wellness, where we create environments where people can get back into their bodies. We're really passionate about that. And then our GP practice is in Sandton. You can email us at staywell@healthwithheart.co.za. You can follow me on Instagram at Dr. Sky Scott. You can follow my podcast. I'm going to give a little punch here on Apple or Spotify. It's a place where you can empower yourself with new tools for healing and expansion. And thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. If you want to go climbing up and down the stairs at Westcliff, you might find her there too.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's really been informative and engaging. And we will, please God, have you on again and maybe continue this discussion, because the more we discuss, the more we learn, the more we understand, the more we are empowered. That's a wrap up for the Healthy You, Wealthy You show. Thank you again, Dr. Scott and Faggy, and we'll be back same time, same place, I think next week. Have a good week ahead.